Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, listeners. This is your host, Reverend Reuben Dockery. Thank you for tuning in to Talk Straight on Blog Talk Radio. Here, you can share your thoughts as well as become informed about very important social issues confronting society today. Please take the time to visit my website at bfcinstitute.com. That's bfcinstitute.com to learn more about our efforts to educate, inspire, and empower disadvantaged families across America to improve the quality of life. The best way to stay in the loop of future broadcasts, times and locations for our traveling educational lecture series, and innovative ideas is to become a BFC Institute seminar participant. You may do so by clicking the Join Our Group tab on the homepage. I would be delighted to respond to your suggestions and engage you further in most transformative information. Again, thank you for joining us, and I look forward to hearing from you online.
And good evening again. Welcome to another episode of Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. We're grateful to have you join us again. The number to call us and participate in our open mic dialogue is 657-383-0944. Again, that's 657-383-0944. We welcome your question, your comment. We only ask that you keep it relevant to our dialogue and our discussion for the evening, and that we be respectful to one another as we share our opinions. For our new listeners, perhaps, that are tuning in for the first time, as you've heard, this is a educational lecture series, and we welcome you to follow us. And I want to encourage you to go to that website, www.bfcinstitute.com. Learn more about us and what we're doing. Tuesday and Thursday nights, we strive to air. We'll probably be modifying our schedule in the coming weeks or so. But nonetheless, we're grateful for, again, your participation. You can archive the show anytime after it airs, after tonight. Typically, we go about an hour and a half, or an hour to an hour, hour and a half, sometimes 30 minutes, depending on our travel schedule. All right. We look forward to having Pastor Ricky Waller join us tonight, who is our regular panelist, who's been with us from the onset of the talk show. And we had Mr. Pianchi from St. Louis join us. Perhaps he'll call us again. And the gentleman by the name of Nas, who goes by Nas, perhaps they will call in. Hopefully they will call in enough time for us to properly address the questions or the issues that they raised in our last episode. All that being said, typically we begin with our monologue, which we will do in normal fashion tonight. The topic is, where is there room for marijuana or any other controlled substance in a healthy man's mind? In a healthy man's mind. 1 Corinthians 6 and 19 reads, what? Know ye not that your body is the temple of the Holy Ghost, which is in you, which ye have of God, and ye are not your own? That may not mean anything to someone who is not spiritually orientated or believes in the Bible, if you will, but certainly for me, that's a very important aspect. And is apropos to our conversation in terms of preserving and sustaining the natural health and stability of the body. During the last episode of Talk Straight, as I referenced earlier, on July 18, 2017, there were a few points that were not very well properly responded to by the end of the broadcast. They were raised as we got toward the end of the show, and I did promise to do a part two to that discussion about the debate between the legalization or should marijuana be legal or illegal. All right, but that brings us to our conversation tonight. And the guest panelist was Mr. Pianki, as I mentioned earlier, and he argued some points in support of legalization of marijuana and other drugs, in fact. He opined that it would reduce the arrest rate for use and possession, and that it will stop killings related to street drugs use and distribution. Additionally, he mentioned that there were some medicinal uses for marijuana and other drugs, such as heroin. Another of our listeners, Mr. Nas, introduced the advocacy work of Dr. Carl Hart, who is a professor of psychology and psychiatry at Columbia University. I shared with him that I'm familiar with Dr. Hart. I respect his work, and I understand where he is coming from. While he was appearing, Dr. Hart, that is, before the United States Congress in 2004, I believe it was at the FDA invitation, Dr. Hart advocated for the decriminalization of drug use and distribution. And he did so because his position was that it's responsible for a significant number, particularly of African-American incarcerations. And he went on to make the argument that even though whites use drugs more than African-Americans, African-Americans find themselves incarcerated for the possession and distribution of the substance. Okay? Now, I respect Dr. Hart's research and what he does, and I understand why he made the case for decriminalizing it, but I respectfully take a different position. And as the chief researcher and lecturer for Building Families and Communities Institute, we take a different position. And it is as such. While it's true that there are various medicinal uses for marijuana and other types of drugs we see on the streets, actually, unless you are stricken with a medical condition requiring a prescription of a clinical dose, in other words, you have a licensed physician who have looked at your body, your condition, and are working to try to relieve that issue or address that issue medically in a clinical setting, there is no need to take drugs in your body. Having said that, let me highlight some of the facts related to that. Now, much of this information that I'm sharing with you now or about to share comes from NIDA, the National Institute of Drug Abuse, okay? And they are a major body that does research for the federal government in terms of helping them to identify laws and medicines that are useful and that should be approved by federal drug administration. All right, first, they state that the term medical marijuana refers to treating symptoms of illness and other conditions with the whole unprocessed marijuana plant. Again, let me reemphasize that, with the whole unprocessed marijuana plant or its basic extracts, has not recognized or approved the marijuana plant as medicine. I know many people are pushing for that. FDA have it. Some states have recognized it for medicinal use. However, the Federal Drug Administration has not recognize it as an approved medicine. However, scientific studies of the chemical in marijuana called cannabinoids have led to the FDA approved medication in a pill form. And that medication is known as dronabinol and nabilon. And they're used to treat nausea and to help boost the appetite. Okay? Cannabinoids are chemicals related to delta-9 tetrocannabinol, or THC, as it's known by its chemical name, of marijuana's main mind-altering ingredient. Currently, the two cannabinoids from the marijuana plant that are of interest for medical treatment are the THC and what's called a cannabidiol, or CBD. The body also produces its own cannabinoids naturally. So the notion that some healthy person needs this is just not realistic or truthful. Scientists are conducting preclinical and clinical trials with marijuana and its extracts to treat symptoms of illness and other conditions. So currently there are some trials or some research that's being done. It's not that they are not taking it seriously and considering those things and their effects. Lastly, the FDA requires carefully conducted studies. Now, I want to emphasize this right here. These carefully conducted studies are referred to as clinical trials. There are people out there that there's junk science to explaining why the medical profession and field and FDA are not approving the use of these things recreationally, even though they see that there are some medicinal uses, right? But let's keep in mind that what they do, their standard or criteria, is to conduct clinical trials that are carefully conducted. And they go further to say they should include hundreds or thousands of human subjects to determine the benefits and risk of possible medication. This is not just so you can have fun, but this is so that we can cure certain illnesses and ailments and things of that nature. So it's a structured and controlled, accountable process. So far, researchers have not conducted enough large-scale clinical trials that show that the benefits of the marijuana plant, as opposed to its cannabinoid ingredients, outweighs risk in patients that it aims to treat. The drug culture in America is well established. It has become glorified and popularized and become intricately representative of urban America and its experience in particular, well since the 50s and 60s. Unfortunately, using drugs is associated with the exploitive, demeaning, and culturally counterproductive behaviors that we see in many of these urban cities that are responsible for their plight and destruction. Case in point is Snoop Dogg. One of his songs that he glamorized certain behaviors with, known as sipping on gin and juice. Just for a second. Listen. I got some freaks in the living room getting it on, and they ain't leaving till 6 in the morning. So what you gonna do? I got a pocket full of rubbers in my homeboy's shoe, too. So turn off the lights and close the door. But for what? We don't love them, no. Yeah. So we gon' blow an ounce to this. G's up, freeze up for a second, now bounce to this.
Laid back. With my mind. got me some secret genius. Everybody got their cups, but they ain't chipped in. Now these types of things happen all the time. You gotta get yours, but fool, I gotta get mine. See, everything is fine when you're listening to the D.O.G. I got to cultivate the music that be captivating me. Who listens to the words that I speak?
The power of music to influence behavior cannot be underestimated. And when we hear songs like this one that you hear bumping and banging out of cars and out of houses, where people are on the streets and in parties and all over the place are identifying with the words that he says. He goes on to say that people listen to him and he's got influence over them if you listen to it. Another one briefly before we finish our monologue is Lunias. He's got a song, I Got Five, on it. And when you listen to it, you'll understand the mindset and the motivation for putting your money into these type of things.
Creep on in, on in.
But I'm the type that like the light another joint like Cypress Hill. I still do these spit loogies when I puff on it. I got some bucks on it, but it ain't enough on it. Go get the S-T-I-D-E-S. Nevertheless, I'm hella fresh, rolling joints like a cigarette. So fast across the table like ping pong. I'm gone, beating my chest like King Kong.
When you think about, again, the influence that music has on people, it's a natural response. But furthermore, considering the historic and socioeconomic conditions faced by many young people throughout urban America, the last thing anyone who legitimately is concerned about their well-being and healthy development should do is to encourage them to play around the edge with anything that will cause them to be stoned or alter their rational mind, like taking drugs. The number to call is 657-383-0944. We welcome your question, your comments tonight, and we're grateful to have our panel on with us. I think we got Pastor Waller and Bro Charles here tonight, and I was hoping the other gentlemen call. Maybe they will. If they call at the end of the show, we'll just keep moving on. And we try to have this second half to address their concerns, as we attempt to do in our monologue. Good evening, gentlemen. Pastor Waller, how are you, sir?
Hey, I'm good. How you doing? I'm good to be in the house one more time, man. Pastor Doctor and Brother Charles, and for those who are tuned in.
Yes, sir. Brother Charles, good evening, sir.
All right, how's it going, gentlemen?
Good. Let me reiterate something before we move forward. The text in 1 Corinthians 6:19 asks a question, says, what? Know you not that your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit, of the Holy Ghost, which is in you? I want to put a pin right there. It begs the question, are you aware of what your body has the capability of doing? It's your most precious gift. You ruin that, man. You ain't got that. You don't get another one. You understand what I'm saying? Why would anybody want to encourage a young man who's young, dumb, and don't know, learning how to distinguish his left from his right foot? Why would you encourage some young cat to go and play around with something like that? Who in their right mind would do that? Somebody help me with that.
Well, I tell you what, being a witness, man, I've been beat down by the drugs, so I would be the first to say I wouldn't encourage nobody, you know, to indulge at all. I mean, respectfully, mm-hmm. for those who decide to do that, I mean, it's up to them. But I will say that if I had to encourage someone to do or not to do any drugs, I think the witness would prove that I've been beat down tremendously, you know, and it
okay.
had to do with a major part of the drugs in one form
right.
or another, you know,
right.
getting to use it and finding ways and means to get more. You know, it became
mm-hmm.
a style of living. So, you know, in other words, to break it down and make it short, it's a powerful addiction, man, and it have destroyed many lives, you know, from
sure.
my experience. And when I say it had destroyed many lives, and it's still doing the same thing right now. So
right.
to do much as to legalize it or to just, you know, to encourage someone to say, hey, man, try this. You know, you may like it. Oh, no, I'll never do that again. You know, with the rest of my
well,
life, man. I mean, go ahead.
Yeah. No, you make a great point. The question or the issue was raised that it sounds like you were promoting your book, and I want to blow your horn for you. I'm promoting your book. That's part of why I invited you on, because I'm doing it. Why am I doing that? Well, you and I met locally in Nashville on a radio show where the question was asked, how do we save our young people from gangs, from drugs, and from the self-destruction we see? Well, you stepped up to the plate, brother. And not only are you talking about it, but you penned your experiences in the form of a book. Now, that's instructional. Why wouldn't we want to share that information to help save some lives? I mean, I'm not saying that, you know, yours is the only one that anyone can benefit. I've written books. But the point here is,
mm-hmm.
here is something, and we're blessed to have the Charles, the actual author himself, online with us. The man who wrote the book, whose life is about. We got him online. That's the benefit here. And I pray that as
mm-hmm.
others listen to the show and gain that information, they can appreciate what we're trying to do. And prayerfully, Pastor Waller, as we move around to the various cities, Lord bless us. We want, you know, when you're available to go with, we'd like to have you come be our guest and spotlight you and have you talk to young people about this. Because that's, you know, the thing is, Charles,
uh-huh.
some people take the position that ain't my problem. That ain't none of my business. And I personally, I'm concerned about that. I really am. When my people are hurting and perishing, that's my business. Songwriter said, when something is wrong with my baby, I'm y'all understand what I'm saying. When something is wrong with me. Yeah, that's what Sam and
yeah.
D wasn't
yeah.
saying, Pastor Wallace.
It makes
but,
sense. It makes a lot of sense, you know, when you're concerned about others. You know,
right.
if you will, you know, the word God does say, you say, we being who are strong, all battle in front of the week, you know, and not to please ourselves. And, you know, with that type of information, I mean, I can only imagine, you know, me promoting unrighteousness for so many years and promoting
wow.
it, you know, be out. And then suddenly you come up with something good and one say, hide it up under, just under the bed or hide it somewhere and just make sure that you don't tell nobody about it. I mean, that sounds like basically what you're saying. So it made sense
right.
that you said that because, you know, that wasn't even on my mind, you know, trying to promote a book for a dollar. It was striving to promote information that would break down strongholds. And,
yes.
you know, that's just, I guess, to do all the harm that I've done for many years, you know, it costs a lot of money to do people harm. You know?
Right.
Yeah, man. I mean, and it started out with just having fun. But all of a sudden,
mm-hmm.
you know, multitudes of lives was being corrupted through me. You know, I just personally stand
right.
up and admit myself, you know, confess that I wasn't pleased with you. So,
okay.
you know, I think it's only fair to to be encouraged and to take that what you just said and say, hey, man, why not promote your book? That makes sense.
Well, and to that end, those that are listening or will listen later, you can go to the website that we put out there, our website, and it is on our back page. Click over the Contact Us, hover over the Contact Us label, and then go down the back page, and you'll find it there with this description and all. It's an easy read, and it's not terribly expensive. And every time you get one of the books, Pastor Wilder has committed to supporting this cause for the radio show and the traveling lecture series. So we're serious about getting the word out, and not only getting the word out, but making a difference, and not just where we are, but every place the Lord will bless us to go. So, I mean, I want to again emphasize the fact that this is not a game for me, and I don't believe it's a game for Pastor Walker.
Oh,
I've been on him for a little while. For a little while now, he seemed very serious to me about what he's doing. But having said that, I've been kind of addressing some of the things that the brothers brought up last episode before we move on from this particular topic here, which is a very important one. And that's why we raised the question, where is there room for marijuana in a healthy man's mind? You want to hit that for me, Charles? That question. Respond to that question.
Where is room in a healthy man's mind for marijuana?
Or any other cannabis?
We definitely have to minimize the attention that it gets, but also have to be fulfilled with something in place as well.
Okay.
So I think it's those college years, the experimental stage, and a lot of kids, I realize they kind of rebellious. You got that rebellious kind of mindset, like you're gonna do the opposite out here, and you kind of fall into that just being rebellious. So you got to be careful what mind frame you in as a kid. It's more than just the marijuana. You fall into doing all kind of skipping school. It's just being rebellious against law. So you attend to fall in that story.
I'm so glad you brought up the issue of rebellion, because often you're right. The tendency to be risky and to play on the wild side oftentimes is a manifestation of rebellion. Rebellion against what? Now, one of the things I purport is that culturally we have to define what fatherhood is and what family is. See? Because it's there that our children start out. And as a father, when you teach your children that you don't be obedient to what I say just because I said, but because it's profitable for reproof. It will save your life. It will enrich your life. It will cause you to be productive and successful if you follow what? Patterns of behaviors where others have been successful. And I'm convinced that one of the reasons so many children are rebellious is because they don't have enough proper pro-social instruction at home. So they grow up listening to everything and everybody else out in the world because the voice of authority that should have been prevalent in their lives was missing. And sometimes they got a pair of bricks in the house with them.
All right.
But we allow this behavior and this mentality to continue because it's not socially or politically correct to talk about that. Now, the truth of the matter, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. Ain't no two ways about that. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. And either I need to correct myself or get out the way. Go ahead,
y'all. Yeah, like I said about that, you kind of got that type of mindset, it tend to put you in a category of, like, taking a risk. That's a bad kind of mind frame to be in, because, being a grown person, and you got to choose your role models careful. You got to know the end and out of what you're choosing, because everything you see, you see all the glitter and glamour and stuff, but sometimes behind closed doors it comes with a lot of other stuff too, and that's the stuff the kids don't get to see. I think it's kind of misleading in that direction, because they following an image, but they're not really following the whole lifestyle that person got to that point. Any person you see out here successful, believe me, they got a story. They didn't just wake up and they just had it all. It was a journey. They just knew that. They know that success is not an overnight thing. It's a lifestyle. And if you know it's a lifestyle, then we don't have a play in your lifestyle. You got to know that.
Right. Right. And you have to be disciplined to following the lifestyle, the way of life. That's correct. You know, I told my children, tried to impart on them at least anyway, that probably the most dangerous time in a person's life is when they become of legal age and consenting. You grown. Because don't nobody give grown people a second look, do they? They expect you to have it together. You slip up, you run up,
right.
You don't get done up, right? You don't get a second chance, oftentimes.
Right.
But at least when you're a child, they will give you some sort of confession and allow you to correct yourself. When you get grown, we expect you to know, you know. So even grown people have expectations, and they should put guidelines and structures and rules on themselves. Otherwise, somebody else gonna catch you.
Right. When you're a kid, I believe you think you're separating yourself from your childhood by doing stuff like that. Well, I'm grown now. All kind of stuff. And that's one of the categories you fall into, trying to separate your childhood into being adulthood because you've been seeing grown people doing it. So now it makes you think you're grown by doing it. But it can lead you into a disastrous, end situation.
Right.
Yeah, man.
And before you know it, that's right. And before you know it, you caught out there in the middle of the ocean and you can't even swim. That's deep.
Man.
And then you let somebody, some fast talking rascal talk you into jumping off the boat, and you know you can't swim.
Yeah. And that's deep, pretty deep, there, brother. Because there's a lot of chance takers, man, that don't know how to do what which others are doing or indulging in, but yet still are willing to take the chance. Now, I was thinking about when I said something about they have to replace it with something, with the things that they're doing by way of destruction. So if you replace it with something, for instance, go back to what we were talking about getting high. See, I had to replace it with something. So I no longer get high, I just stay high now. That's a replacement.
Okay.
There's a substitute. And there's a positive substitute, And I think it's worth talking about because a lot of people know nothing about that. I don't say nobody knows. I just say a lot of people know. And that's a big, great examples, man. I think that's what is missing. I think once exercise the power of being an example, because that's what's happening now for people to be caught up like they are now. They have those examples that they're being glorified right before the eyes of the people, especially the innocent eyes. People are young and they just come out in the world, man, they're stepping out, man. They're ready to try some things. And the goal of the game is to follow what others do for the
do
most
like
part.
They do.
And do that's like how a lot of them get captured,
All right.
Yeah.
Well, listen, we're at the top
of
the hour.
I got catch.
Okay. All right. Hold that thought. I see we got 10-9-8. We're at the top of the hour here. Let me get this little squeeze, this break in here. And when we come back, I want you to tell me, 10-9-8, what happens when your mind start playing tricks on you? Give me a few minutes after when we come back here.
Hey, they call me Pook. I'm from these streets. Somehow, I live to see my 18th birthday. I managed to graduate from juvenile detention to adult prison. People try to tell me I should grow up and be a man. But I'm the best man I know. Somebody asked, well, I see myself 10 years. Man, I'm just trying to survive these streets day by day.
BFC Institute needs your help to reach the Pookies across America. Please support our traveling educational lecture series addressing perceived threats to African American males. To learn more, please visit us at bfcinstitute.com. That is bfcinstitute.com. Simply click the red sticker for details.
You're listening to Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dockery. We're on talking about where is there room for marijuana or any other controlled substance in a healthy man's mind. And we have our panelists with us, Pastor Ricky Waller, and 1098 is joining us tonight. Tell me that, Outkast, what happens when your mind starts playing tricks on you?
Well, if your mind is playing tricks on you, you have to stop and analyze what am I doing in order for my mind to play tricks on me. Start with your food. Okay, perhaps it's eggs. No, can't be the eggs. Okay. I've been smoking marijuana. Things
what?
Of that nature. Oh, that's what I need to do. I need to leave the drugs alone. There is no room in a healthy man's mind for marijuana and any other drug unless it was introduced to you medically by a doctor, a professional. There is no room for too many drugs. I would, like I say, analyze myself. You know, Reverend Dockery, as you know, your body talks to you. It sends you signals.
Yes, it does.
You know,
that's right.
Depending on what you're doing. You know, I mean, the last time we talked Tuesday, you know, I mentioned that, you know, which I had smoked and drank, for, you know, a number of years, you know, and it began to have an effect on me. Marijuana, you know, number one, like I say, rapid heartbeat, and then, you know, like when I smoked, you know, I would get nauseated. I was to the point to where it was that my mind was telling me that I couldn't do anything unless I smoked a joint. When I got up in the morning, before I brushed my teeth or washed myself up, I stepped outside and smoked me a joint. Now, there's the mind playing tricks on you, see?
Yes, sir. Yes,
well, excuse me, go ahead, sorry.
No, I'm sorry. You finish your thought.
But it's a part of your mind playing tricks on you. You know, the mind is a terrible thing. You mentioned getting control of your mind. I've always been at the point to where it was that once I made up my mind to do something, you know, concerning me and concerning my body, I did it. You know, I remember I used to smoke real heavy, and I was smoking a cigarette one day, and I looked at the cigarette, and it just looked nasty. I said, man, I'm going to stop smoking. I stopped smoking about 5-6 years. I didn't have to go and get no that gum that they were selling, you know, years ago or anything of that nature. I ain't need no psychotherapy. The psychotherapy is the mind. It's all in the mind. You know, a lot of people, you know, they feel they're weak because, first off, they don't sit and meditate, you know, and say, hey, wait a minute. If your mind is playing tricks on you, it's something that you are putting in your body normally to cause, you know, those type reactions.
Okay. Or, that's a great point, or there's something you're not properly doing to nourish your body that can cause your mind to play tricks on you. Works both ways.
True.
Now, it's interesting you said that because when you think about it, what happens when you become addicted? They have done studies and watched people's brains and their behavior as they walk, because they were hooked up to machines and what have you. They looked at the brain pattern and things of that nature. What they discovered is that with the addiction, your body, your brain trains your body to look for something that you, that your body says, I enjoy, this makes me feel good, it makes me relief. Some people gamble, and that gives them relief. Some people are sex addicts. That gives them relief. People who are caught up in pornography and things of that nature, that gives them relief. Others use drugs. Others drink alcohol, right? The catch is that the body, the mind has told you that this is what gives me relief, so I continue in that behavior looking for what? What they call, Pastor Waller, a high. You're looking for the next high. I mean,
yeah, that's,
and it's interesting. Go ahead, Pastor. Go ahead.
No, that's correct. I mean, when you're talking about a high, man, I mean, not to mention that it's big business. It's a whole lot that's wrapped up into the doing drugs. Because I think there are people who know that the drugs is doing a lot of harm to people. I think there are people that know that.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, that's right.
You know, and the only thing about that, you won't find them admitting that. You see, and then when you don't admit it, that means you're in a state of denial. That's if you know that it's doing harm to people. Where I had to come to myself and realize that this drug that I'm serving is doing harm to people, man. You know, most of all, it was harming me. So, you know, I had no control over it. I mean, it had control over me, so I had to bow down to it. And in spite of what it was doing to my body, as you said, you know, I didn't know anything about the Bible. My body is the temple of the Holy Spirit, you understand, the Holy Ghost, and it's not even mine. And I still conduct myself and trust myself and destroyed myself, you know, by the hands of someone who knew that drug was harming me. So, you know, and then when I found out myself, I was still slanging, if you will, serving, distributing, supplying of the usual words. But yet still, when I discovered the harm that it was bringing to people, you know, I humbled myself and said, no, I can't keep doing that, man. I mean, I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy. Apparently, there are some people who just don't care about that. And that's why, you know, the drugs are still plentiful, you know, as it is. And, it's about getting some information. And I think that's what we're talking about now, how to put footage out there that would benefit another generation who don't know anything about that. And maybe, just maybe, if a person have an open mind, then they can be willing to say, okay, let's get this information into people who really don't know what they're getting ready to get into, you see, and be an example. I just talking. See, I had my cousin, he even explained to me, shared with me about not to do it, but his example didn't line up. See, he meant well. He really didn't want me on that drug, but he was doing it himself. He just didn't want to be in the trap, man. And I praise God for him because he did, again, he meant well. But his example wasn't strong enough to keep me from doing it because I admired my cousin. And sure enough, I got on that drug and it took me 20 years to kick it, you know. So that's that's why I tell people about how to be free and what it takes. And it's written in the book, man. It's not going to harm no one, but it will help somebody. Maybe someone in his family or her family, you know.
Right.
May not be you. Right. Maybe somebody you know. Give it to them.
There you go. And, Pastor, you said something that's key because I hear people all the time say, that ain't my problem, and I don't care. Let them kill themselves with it. You know what I mean? Just don't bring it over here. They can legalize as long as they don't be a problem for me. You know, that's a lot of selfish mindset. Because it's not until you become a victim of the very thing that either directly or indirectly you encourage that you're concerned. You know?
Right.
And
definitely.
I wish our other caller was on from the other night because one of the things he said is, I ain't never done it, and I want to do it. Well, you have to appreciate. You have to appreciate, and I think 1098 will witness this as well. that if you ever been through it, you do tend to care about those who are struggling with it now. And I say that to say that it's not our intention to demean or defame those who are addicted and who are currently struggling with that. That's not the import. That's not the intent, to make you feel bad. But really what we're talking about is how to break this cycle, man, and how we can move forward and have people live healthy lives and retrain their thinking, retool their actions and things of that nature.
Okay.
So, but, you know, I want to, Charles.
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay, I wanted to bring some to your attention and get your feedback on it. Because yesterday in my monologue, I shared this little excerpt. In 1712, a guy came to the so-called New World, America, North America, and he was trying to help slave owners whose slaves were running away. They'd have to chop their feet off and chop their hand off and beat their backs and things of that nature. So he said, we want to try to make sure you don't damage your product so you can make money. And he came over here to give off his expertise. Here's what he said. Our experts warn us about the possibility of this phenomenon occurring, for they say the mind has a strong drive to correct or recorrect itself over a period of time. If it can touch substantial origin to history, to its historical base, and they advise us that the best way to deal with the phenomenon is to shave off the brute's mental history and create a multiplicity of phenomena of illusions, that each illusion will twirl in an orbit cycle, in an orbit, something like balls floating in a vacuum. What do you think about that, Charles? Is that not where we are today, man?
That's exactly where we are today, man. But without that missing link, you'll never know where you're going wrong. You're constantly searching. You got to know where you come from. And I ain't talking about your neighborhood. I'm just talking about you as a person. But with
them,
right. When you got that linked up together, I mean, you'll have a better mindset towards your future. Now you know what you're up against. Now you know the opponent. You know what the test is. You know what's up against you. Once you know it's up against you, the odds are against you. They're not betting you're going to succeed. They're betting you're going to lose. If you know that,
right,
then it tends to make you a little harder. You won't give
right.
in and throw in the top because you know it's planned for you to fail. They're not going to say that. They're going to make it seem like it's a fair game. Everybody got the same opportunity. If you get your education, it's more than that. It's a world hidden within the world. It's one team. They're strategically trying to win. You got to know that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they're betting that you lose, and they're betting you're not going to figure out that you're losing.
Wow.
That's the
wow.
funnier part. You can't even figure out you're losing.
Man,
you gotta win. That's all. Come out of. You gotta prove that you can win by action, not just talking.
Wow. You remember you talked about rebellion and wanting to keep
uh-huh.
up with your peers, succumbing to
uh-huh.
peer pressure. Well, what I'm submitting
uh-huh.
to you is that if a little girl doesn't have a father to tell her you're beautiful, you're precious, your body is more precious than gold, and that you should demand respect from everybody that want an ounce of your time, right? A little boy
yeah.
have a father to tell him you are royalty. You have a right to be successful, to be happy. You got a right to do as anyone else, as long as you don't cross your boundaries with anyone else, right? That's what we call
right.
self-concept. That's a strong self-concept. And what I'm saying is it's easy for you to convince weak-minded individuals who have low self-concept, it's easy for you to convince them to experiment with this, that, and the other. That's where we got to get, man, to where we refocus
uh-huh.
on the family and certain values within family and the people in the family that need to be there. Where did I go wrong with that, gentlemen?
Right. I mean, I totally agree with you. I totally agree. That's definitely where it started, in the household. And just knowing the battle and know what's going on out here. That's it right there. I agree with you.
Yeah. You got to tell them the truth about these streets. You understand what I'm saying? Now, Pastor Waller, when I first got married, wife and I were starting our family, she knew I grew up running from the police in the projects of Chicago, right? And a couple of times they had a few close calls, right? And she,
yeah.
So I said, well, I want to tell them what I know. She said, no, no, no. They ain't going to go through all that. I said, well, honey, I'm not saying we got to live in a project of Nashville, but there are some streets, there are some things about the street they need to know. And I need to be honest with them about it. You understand what I'm saying? But I'm simply saying that when you've been through an experience and God has blessed you to make it through it, you become the teacher and you become the hope for those who are desperately needing that instruction. We take the position, well, I don't care, man, it ain't my problem. You know, that kind of leaves some people in the balance there. That leaves some people in the balance there. Having said that, you can't make nobody do right. So how do we balance that, Pastor Wong?
Well, as I said, you know, we live by examples, and once we do that, you know, it takes what it takes. You know, the harvest is very big. It's a large harvest out there. But there's a few laborers. There's a few people that are concerned. And then when you do that and you start to appreciate knowing that you're thankful to be a part of the few. And what pleases God is, you know, you being able to say, okay, we may have many that don't really care, but I just have a great concern because somebody cared about me. And that's where I'm at. You know, I had a man came out of a church, man, and he cared about me. Although he wasn't indulging in heroin or anything, but he was an overseer, a leader of a congregation, man. And he humbled himself and heard the word of God, and he came out of the building and said something to a man that was lost, man. And I thank God for this man every day. The late Dr. James Cook. And I mean, this man, he stood firm, and he, you know, he let it be known that he wasn't going to continue to ride by me, a person out there in the world with no one to say anything encouraging to him, and he decided to do that. And, you know, to just make a long story short, had he not done that, I wouldn't be sitting on the panel right now talking about change, you know, and how, you know, how I should have a concern because he had one for me. Why shouldn't I have a concern for others? And that's not saying everybody has to do that. I'm not saying that. But I heard somewhere in there one day I was listening to him speaking in the church, and I didn't see it in the book, in the Bible or anything. But I heard someone say, I'm going to praise him if I have to praise him all by myself.
See,
I was caught up at that time. I was captured. I was still locked up in the drug game. And then when I got free, now I understand what he's talking about. Not everybody wants to be a part of something that's positive. So every now and then I have to get out there and look around and say, man, I have to do it even though, you know, I don't have a lot of help out here, but I'm going to just do all I can do. And that's the thing about the few. And yeah, so just know, just be encouraged and keep, you know, putting that positive flow in motion like you're doing. You never know, man, how many people would appreciate, you know, that you're on air right now, extending an invitation to anyone who is trapped in a world of addictions. You know, because there's plenty of people that are, you know, and that's just, let's be honest. It's okay to be honest about this thing. There are many people.
Right.
That are captured, don't even want to be captured, man. They would love to be free.
They captured him, and I was just celebrating. A lot of kids, they get caught up at a party, and they're trying to have a good time, turn into an addiction, turn into an addict, want to party too much. You gotta have a plan for your life. You know what I'm saying? You can't just be out here just randomly going with. Well, they say it's a party going on down. It's gonna be a party, man. You gotta get serious with them. Man, I wouldn't be mad if they could just focus and be serious in the beginning of their life. And you know, I mean, at one point in your life, you got to be serious about. Once you take this seriousness, probably won't be as bad. But what I'm seeing in the community is, you know, they throwing like eggs in the basket in the first year. They graduated from high school. They already ready to jump in the deep end.
Yeah.
Think about it. We encourage sexual promiscuity every time prom come around, do we not? Society, I mean.
Right.
Do we not?
Right.
Because the expectation when you go to prom, after prom, you're supposed to do what?
Mm-hmm.
You're supposed to go hook up.
Yes,
y'all talk to me now. Keep it real. Talk straight now. Talk straight.
That's the truth.
It's those subtle things that get you caught up. You heard what Snoop Dogg said? Snoop said, I got these guys, and they going to the hotel with me, and I'm going to just do what I want to with them. This is the mindset. This is the expectation. And, you know, a little girl can't spend time with a little fella without, or vice versa, without the assumption that he, she's supposed to come up off of something. I mean, what? I mean,
yeah,
where we at with
right. It's like a generation curse passed down. Just the wrong mindset to pass down to the next person. Nobody ever changed what you're supposed to do. Everybody just follows the same trend from back in the 70s, I guess. Whatever. That's why you got to really think for yourself. You know, you got to be a real critical thinker for yourself, and not be led by what's in, by you know what you see. You can't walk by that what's in front of you. You got to have your own mind. Be stronger than what you see around you, because a lot of people are weak because you think strong. And you don't realize that we can see you fall to when they transform. And you can see how red that person really is. So you got to have your own mind. If you can get away from it, you win 80% of the game if you can stay away from the drugs. You winning. If you know just that much, if you don't learn nothing else,
right.
You're winning.
You're right.
Financially, you winning financially. I had two. It costs in the pocket to get high. It costs money. You don't want to be broke, then why you be not? You want to be not, don't do it. You know what I'm saying?
And then, when you ain't got no money, you go rob, kill, and steal, don't you?
Man, you kind of yep. Who want to figure out what
Outcast.
Yes, sir.
So Outcast.
Yeah.
I'm trying to get this right, man. I don't want to mess up.
Okay.
Where did we get the notion that it's okay to hang our brains at the door when it comes to making wise decisions? Well, I mean, where did it come from, man?
Well, first time I've heard of that one, but I wrap it up with saying a mind is a terrible thing to waste.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
You know, I can talk about a lot of things concerning drugs.
Mm-hmm.
They locked me. I got locked up when I was 20. You know, I had murder charges. I better know nobody. You know, they locked me up when I was 20. I didn't get released until I was 26. And that time of incarceration, talking about drugs, you know that brute came in a stick. I saw guys, old guys, take that, put it in a towel, and squeeze it. You know, getting the alcohol out of it, call themselves getting the alcohol out of it, drinking it.
I've seen them aspirin.
You know, it's in the mind. You know, like you were talking about when I had them hooked up. You know, that was that brain functioning. I got to have it. This is what's gonna make me feel good. You know, I was a kid. 20 years old.
Right, right.
You know, in the state of Tennessee, during that period of time, they sent me to the roughest prison in the world, you know, and that was Fort Pillow. Believe me. I mean, I saw everything. You know, wish they had drugs in the prison. Guys would go to visit, come back. When they walk across the yard, they get ganged, snatch their pants pockets off of them, beat them, take the drugs. You know, I mean, it's just real ugly. But I've always been a strong individual. When I say I quit, I quit. You know, when I felt that something had a, you know, got a real strong hold on me, that's when I quit. That's when I stopped.
Okay. You had let it
you
go.
You know, but I don't try to get off the subject or whatever. We're talking about the mind. The mind, if you can't get control of it, you lost. And see, this is what's going on now. You know, the brother was talking, you know, he was saying about his cousin. Well, my cousin tried to give me crack cocaine. I did time in penitentiary with guys during that period of time. I got out in 1984, too. They were shooting up T's and blues, you know.
You know, I would drink, you know, I would drink my beer, you know, my whiskey or whatever, you know, and I ride around with them, go to the house. But guess what? When they got ready to shoot up, you know what they tell me? They would tell me to leave. Man, don't never do that.
Okay.
I said, you don't have to worry about that. You know what I mean? But anyway, I cut short.
No. I appreciate that. I think as we bring the conversation into full focus here, in this question about where there's room, clearly there is no room. Other than the illusion that someone gives you of room. Now, you know, you make room, people make room for whatever they want to do. And oftentimes it is the basis of their demise. Now, I'm thinking about what Willie Lynch said. You know, Willie Lynch said, as long as you can keep their mind spinning in an orbit cycle, where all they're thinking about is entertainment, chasing sports,
right,
playing basketball or football or baseball or
right,
soccer ball, huh?
Right.
Even spending their time out on the street hanging out, have no focus, no direction, nothing that you're trying to accomplish, no goals and objectives that are time phased and measurable. That's one of the reasons why, you know, a lot of people who have a whole lot of time on their hands, it's not that they have time, their time is not poor, it's their time is not properly managed. And so all
exactly,
these things factor into why you have time to entertain destructive type suggestions or ideas and what have you. Especially young children that go outside and they, you know, I never will forget, gentlemen, when I was in high school, I mean, you know, most of the cats didn't know what they were talking about anyway. All of them going around telling their fables and stories about how big and how many girls they had. They don't buy, you know, you ain't busting.
Right.
I mean, you can't bust a grape with a 50-pound sledgehammer. I mean, but it was just the nostalgia of talking among one another and listening to one another's
right,
lies and the imagination. You know what I mean?
Right.
Going back to, again, the question that begs the question, what role does the family, the structure of your family, and the basis of instruction that come from your family, how much does that factor into somebody's decision that they need or don't need drugs? You want to hit that for me, Pastor Waller?
Well, I'm listening. I'm still, you know, meditating. I'm reminded, as I said earlier, and I really mean this, man. I mean, when you do something intentional, and you say, I may not get them all, but I'm going to get some of them to try this.
Mm-hmm.
That it was the intent of whoever it was who thought about putting these drugs over in the area where people are. No matter what type of family
okay,
you come from, you know, and I, again, would say, man, I've seen all type of people use drugs, you know.
Gotcha.
And you, if you put it out there and you just believe that somebody's going to bite, and it happens, man. And so I just thank God for opportunities such as this, that
mm-hmm,
when you're talking about something real serious, because Brother Charles said it earlier, if we can be able to stay free from the drug, that's a
mm-hmm,
big portion of our problem.
Mm-hmm.
It's not minor, maybe as it
no,
once upon a time was. This is major. And it has caused so many things to take place as a result of that. So the plan of whoever it was that put it in motion, he see that it worked then, it's still working now, and he don't believe that a person would ever find the solution to break it. But let me just keep myself humble and honest about this. God gave me an assignment. And he said, Ricky, if nobody else wants to help you, I'll be there with you.
Okay.
And so
okay,
nobody else have to purchase the book. See, I believe anyone who heard about this book, you know, should purchase it and find out what's in it. Because other than that,
okay,
you probably would say things you don't know what you're talking about. You may say things
mm-hmm,
that you think, that you believe, and that's what people probably would do, and they're supposed to do that. But if you ever had a chance to pick it up and read it, you'll say, oh, I didn't know that, and this is what's going on. And a whole lot of people that's in someone's family, man, you know, you never know until you try it. Just like people tried the drug and got captured, no one that's tried this book, you won't be able to get free from it as a result of the book if you don't try it. But just let's say somebody in someone else's family tried, man, you know, because it may not be you that's on it, but you know someone.
Right.
And they tried, and they come
well,
to tell you the book, and guess what? I got free. Wouldn't you be glad when you rejoice with them versus sitting back knowing somebody that you can get for and you don't do it? What is that saying? I don't care about the person. You know?
Right.
That's what that's
okay,
to
me. You made a great point, and it brought a question about, suppose I'm a young person, don't have a problem with drugs. That ain't my problem, you know. How could this book be, how could the information in your book be useful to them? If, you know, they have a normal lifestyle, they're being productive and they're successful at meeting the goals they set for them, is there an application of the information for them?
Sure, without a doubt.
Okay.
It can keep them forever using, because they could be tempted, they could have a thought of doing it, and then all of a sudden they can say, oh, yeah, I know not to do it now because of this or that. You see, so it can be in many ways. The book talks about a world of addiction. It didn't just talk about drugs, a world of addiction. You know, see, I was addicted to so many things, it's not enough time to tell it all. So, you know, but drugs was an angel.
Let me back you up there. Now, you're saying that it ain't just drugs and alcohol that can mess you up. That's what you're saying.
No,
come on,
bigger than that.
Talk on that a little bit more. Talk on that a little bit more.
Yeah, it's bigger than that. If you take the book and turn it over and start reading at the top, it says a practical, trustworthy, biblical-based guarantee to anyone who's trapped in a world of addictions. I don't have it before me, but I'm just paraphrasing. Trapped in a world of addiction. You see what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
Now, that was a man that I found out in the Bible, probably didn't do no drugs, but he had an addiction.
Mm-hmm.
And he was doing all he can do to get free from it, man. And so, you know, this is a humble thing. This is not anything egotistical at all. This is information for our people, because not everybody is using drugs, or some people would never use drugs. But can this book help them? I would say yes. And then it would give them a concern for others, you know, once they realize the pain, the disappointments, and all the harm that a person go through, and families that's been separated and everything. And they may see something in that and say, oh, man, I wonder if this can bring my family back together. Someone like that, man. Send the book off to somewhere, you know, out of town to someone that you know. It's amazing, man, what can be done only if you try. See, that's the thing.
Sure.
If you try. And so, I would say it can help.
Understand your plight. It's hard for them to appreciate your struggle. And by reading that, you gain a better understanding of particularly those who are in the world of addiction or in the cycle of addiction, some of the aspects of why they, you know, and how you can be supportive of them, even though you're not there. So, that's great. Early today, gentlemen, I was talking with my son, and he shared with me a video of this fellow who was talking about race baiting. And one of the things he pointed out is that in each case, somebody is trying to stir your emotions. And essentially, these are my words, play with your mind.
Yeah.
Charles, must we guard ourselves from allowing people to get in our headspace and suggest things to us that will get us all messed up?
Yes, most definitely. That's definitely the first step in it. But.
Yeah, because what happens often is you may be innocent, you know, and not really know what's going on, but you trust that because they talk fast or they look good or they sound like they know what they're talking about, you assume that you can trust them and follow their advice, their guidance. And I think one of y'all said this earlier, before you know it, You're like, man, I'm out here and I can't even swim, man. I'm caught up. I'm caught. I should have asked some more questions.
Yeah.
But I didn't know what questions to ask. That's the only problem.
Yeah, a small print, man.
Wait till you read that small print, huh?
You gotta read small print, man. Sometimes you gotta look at it, especially if you got family members. You kind of see the lifestyle they went through. You know, I mean, that's kind of, if you blessed to see that, people don't need, it's nice. I mean, that's a blessing to see somebody struggling in your family, also, because it's also saving your life. But a lot of people don't have that. Not, and that's true, to get kind of caught up that you don't really get to see somebody going through it. But yeah, see somebody go through it, like what goes on behind closed doors, and you know that's not for you. But like I said, it's the, you know, they start off, I guess the marijuana would be the gateway drug. But, you know, and after that, before you know it, the same person can graduate to another drug and graduate with them. And y'all both out there in a second.
Yes, sir.
And it's different levels. That's why, you know, you can't graduate. That's what you don't realize. You will graduate because your body, it only takes so much and it's not entertained no more. I want to do something different. Now, either you have to be strong. You might graduate to some stuff, man. You can't, ain't no coming back from especially at crack, man. You get to crack. That's, ain't no coming back from that.
Wow.
Man, everybody like, I don't smoke no crack. I ain't going to smoke no crack. But if you took a hit of weed, who knows you from? I mean, you try weed. It's the same motion, lightning in hell.
And let me ask Pat Swallow, what was the average? What's the going price for a bag of weed?
The going price for a bag of weed back when I was coming up, man, it's kind of funny now, though. You know, we used to knuckle up and get a tray bag, $3 bag. And, I mean, a $2 bag, man, had a bunch of joints in it, you know. And we found and passed the joints and everything. Then we started elevating up into a $15 bag, you know. And then it comes to me as a now. What the prices are, man.
Yeah.
I've been out of the game for a long time now. So I don't really know what the prices are now, you know. But I know it's insane, though, man. I know it's very.
Well, the next question. Hold that thought. The next question is, if I ain't got no money to get it, then what's the next progression to get it? I ain't got no money. Well, I think it's about $5 a day.
Oh, man.
The worst half. The worst half. Man, you got free to rent. The free half, that's the one that's going to get you in there.
That's it.
What?
That's it,
brother.
You think you bring your own beach bag? You think I didn't pay for it. Yeah, you're going to pay for it later. You might not be paying now. But
right.
Boy.
Pay later.
I got a case study for you, brother. When I first got to Fist, there was a pretty young lady from Detroit, man. Messed around with this cat, man, and he took her, and that was it. It was spoke. Hey, ladies, what you call it when they go to the club, they don't have to pay. Y'all know what I'm. Huh?
Ladies' night or something.
Yeah, something like that. Well, make a long story short, they in the party, and. You know, I ain't got to pay for my drink. I ain't got to pay for my dope. Somebody else going to my marijuana. Somebody else going to put it. Well, this rascal done laced it with antifreeze, man. And the pole baby. Took that stuff, man, and went into a coma and never made it out. But, Charles, to your point, the free stuff is the stuff that's going to hurt you the most because you will let your protective barriers down enough just to what so you can get it for free.
Fair.
You know, I'm just out of the opinion. If you ain't got to work for it, it ain't no good. I mean, I ain't got to do nothing for it now. Wait a minute, man.
Outcast,
help me. Go ahead,
Al. I was sitting listening, but I was listening to him talk about back in the day. I remember back in the day, it was a nickel sack. You know, it came with a little brown peel bag, you know, a little peel bag. You know, it was nothing roll about 3-5 joints out of it. And then you had your lid, which there was a half a sandwich bag of dope. And out of that, you could roll 45 buck joints you know, that there was a long paper, though with buck joints, or you could take a little small papers and roll United joints. That's how I got started when I started selling dope with a $15 lead of dope weed.
Okay.
And I just kept turning it over, turning it over. But at the end of the day, most of the stuff that's free, it's no good. And see, this is the problem now. This is why so many people are dying, Reverend Doctor, because these so-called dope dealers out here, they are mixing this stuff up with any and everything.
Yeah.
Ohio,
right.
Everywhere else, you know. Pardon me, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Right. No, you're right with opioids and everything. They're slipping this and that and everything in there just to give it. I mean, a lot of times, you know, I never will forget Outkast when cats would come around there with just some old grain chopped up like this. It wasn't
real
stuff. When it burned, you just smell off. Man, you know that was that's fake, man.
Right, you know. Traveling in that, you know, the after effects of traveling in that, you know, which I got robbed, you know, I got hit in the head, you know, stuff like that, but it goes with the territory. At the end of the day, I reared my children. You know, I didn't raise them, I reared them. I gave them everything that I didn't have. I didn't have a father, so therefore I was there with mine, you know, homework,
gotcha.
I mean, everything. And the girls, you know, I haven't understand love. At the end of the day, when you become grown, you are held responsible for yourself. You must be dependent on yourself. You get married, even though he loves you every day, you still should be able to stand on your own. And this is one of the problems. You know, I told him, you know, like I'm talking to you all now, you know, I went down that path, and I would tell him now, you know, don't do that. But let me hold and I'll let you speak. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, great point. Were you going to say something, Pastor Waller?
No, I'm just listening. No.
Okay.
No, I'm just listening. Go ahead.
Go ahead. Who is that? Go ahead.
Basically, when it comes to me, you know, it stated, when what happened to me, I prayed to God. I said, God, if you let me live, I'll never do it again, because I know what I had done that night. I smoked marijuana, drank whiskey, and I dropped one in the pain. You know, you just put that on your tongue. I did that. I knew what was going on. I was up for 3 days, you know. And I prayed, God, if you let me live, I'll never do it again. This was in 1975, you know. I haven't messed with drugs since. But like the good rubber, you know, I stopped selling in 1977 when I got busted. When I got busted, I got a break, you know, because back then, they had got me with 100 buck joints. I was going to drop them off. Drug dealing, it wasn't like it is now. You could sell dope anywhere you walk, anywhere you step, any neighborhood. You got it, you sell it, you know. But I got a break on that. I said, I'm going to stop that. So when I stopped that, you know, I mean, I got with some doggone fools, you know. I mean, I worked, you know. Getting caught up in the trap. The trap is this, and I agree with the gentleman. It's more than one type of trap. The trap is the company you keep also. Because I didn't have to rob or steal nothing. I was just bored. I wanted some action. But my action caused me to spend all those years in the penitentiary. And I went to the penitentiary by myself. I didn't tell it on nobody. And I wasn't going to tell it on my brother. You know? But I agree. You got all kind of traps.
I appreciate you saying that, because as the gentleman introduced Dr. Carl Hart, professor of psychology and psychiatry at Columbia University, it's a black man, and his whole position was he wanted to decriminalize drugs so that so many black people don't go to jail. Well, here's the catch. If you don't start it, you ain't got to stop it. You know?
And
now,
I agree with that 100%.
But here's the catch. If they don't sell dope, what they going to do to make it for themselves? You drop out of high school, right? You don't have a marketable skill. You don't sell dope or hustle or gamble. What are you going to do?
I would suggest going to going and getting a GED program, get a GED, find God,
yep.
and then that's when you begin to move forward. See, I found God a long time ago. This is why throughout the years I was able to do a lot of the things that I've done, college,
okay.
Children, things in that nature. God, mm. God first, everything else falls in line.
Okay.
Right.
Well, makes sense to me. Make a lot of sense to me. Pastor Wally?
Yes, sir.
How long is it going to take? Let me rephrase the question. How long does it take for a person to decide they want to change?
How long does it take for a person to decide?
Yeah,
well,
that they want
to
change. That they want to change.
Yeah. From experience, I can tell you how long it takes to change. You know, a person could want to change and have a desire, you know, and it still may not happen that very moment, but that's a starting point. And then once
okay.
you experience change, it comes in a moment. See, I remember the day that I got free. I don't remember
okay.
the day when I got captured, but I do remember the day that I got free. See, that's the difference. You know, I wanted to change a long time ago, but I didn't know how. I didn't have
okay.
proper instructions, you know. And that's not to blame anyone. It's just that I just didn't know how. And my lawyer, you know, he faithfully defended me. He knew I was a person that lived the street life, so he understood I was caught up in it. And one day, he stopped me from sending me to prison, and he knew that I should appreciate that on this particular time here, and I did. And so I was placed on probation, and I violated my first visit. You know, I took a drug test
oh, wow.
and failed. Well, what
wow.
happened? My lawyer understood something then. He said, that boy, that needs some help for real. I just kept him free, and here he is. He's back facing prison. So anyway, to make a long story short, he came to me. He disregarded any more money. He wasn't thinking about money no more or anything. He had to be touched by God to do that, though, because I don't think we're never going to do that. He said, why don't you get some help for yourself? I said, that's amazing. Him, my lawyer, knowing every time I catch a case, he's going to prosper from it. He forgot all about the money. He wasn't thinking about money, man. That man said, won't you go get some help for yourself? And I remember him saying that. And sure enough, man, I haven't been caught back up any since, you know. And that's amazing that you said that. So it's all about that moment, man. That's how fast change can take place. But it didn't take but a moment to get captured into it. So it takes a moment to get free. But if we don't know, you know, we don't know how to apply it. That's why
right.
we do it to get up.
I posed the question about change because there's an important lesson. Sam Cooke said change
mm-hmm.
don't come. What I discovered
yeah.
about change is that it requires that you give up something. It's almost like repentance. You,
yeah.
If you're doing the same thing, you ain't changed. See, it's a concept in drug treatment called dry drunk. Or a drug user. And that means you're not using the substance directly, but you got the mentality of a user. And until you change everything about yourself, you'll find yourself continuously engaging in the same type of behavior and being reckless and destructive, and you don't even know why. But change, if we're going to change, the minute a man decides I'm ready to make a sacrifice and give up something, he's on the road to making a successful change.
Yeah, he is. Only when he has that inner man, because outwardly, you know, they're going to see most of the time, that's most of the time, they see the activities that are still going on and the power thereof.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And even though I won't stop, you know how Paul said, it was real plain how he put it, you know, for if I do that, I would not. It's no longer I to do it, but
but it's what's inside of me that's controlling me. You know, even though I want to do right, I just didn't know how at that time. And so that's the thing, you know, that's happening with a lot of hopeless and helpless people is that they don't know how. They want to get free. It's like they just don't know how. So what you're saying now, you know, just think that concept is a very righteous concept, and it should be carried out for those at least who are grown, that you would think.
Right.
Man, I was thinking like a child, man, on up until I was 34, you know. And I said, man, that's amazing. When I found out I had a choice, I was 34, man, and that's when I changed. Sad to say, but I was grown way back then, but I wasn't grown. I was thinking like a child, man.
Wow.
You know?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
It actually happened.
So, okay. No, I was just going to say, we've been talking about answering the question, where is there room for marijuana or any other controlled substance in a healthy man's mind? We discovered tonight that there's no place for it. There's no place for it. When your mind is preoccupied and when you are focused and fixed on something, you don't have time for any other distractions. And the thing is, you have to be in control of your mental faculties in order for you to avoid somebody else causing you to be distracted. So that's the powerful lesson here, I believe, that we take away from this. And as we move forward, we want to let our listening audience know that these topics are designed to open up our thought processes and to encourage us to either consider or reconsider some things that we perhaps were not very active about or are moving on. As a whole, and certainly every time we have the discussions, I go back and listen to it, and I grow myself from the discussion that we're having. And I realize that no one of us have all the answers, but it is through our collective communication and dialogue that we come up with some pretty good answers. But I know one thing. Our babies are suffering out there across America, and somebody needs to bring some answers. So God be our help, we'll do that. We got about 2 minutes. Outcast, you want to give us a brief, give us about 30 seconds before we get out of here?
You know, I just hope each of us would, you know, continue trying to, not trying to, but just continue spreading the message and trying to lift people up, you know, just down, you know, and move along.
Yes, sir. All right, Charles?
Yes, I appreciate you having, you know, the show. I'm very thankful for the topic. That's very, I mean, that's a big concern, definitely in our community. And it definitely needs to be talked to, because I feel like it's a lot just not being said. That's part of the problem. So I'm thanking you, so, you know, just to have the show to be able to get out there to the listeners. If somebody listens, they can be able to, you know, take something from it and hopefully can learn from it. But a lot of stuff,
right,
I feel like it's because, you know, I'm glad, I'm thankful for the show.
All right, we'll pray that. We pray we continue. We'll be able to continue there. Pastor Waller, wrap us up here, man. Before we cut out, we'll be back next Tuesday at 7 o'clock, Lord willing.
Yeah, we want to thank everybody that tapped in to the session, and we want to believe for the process that it would be continually ongoing knowledge and wisdom for anyone who's open minded. And I want to thank you also, Pastor Dockery, for doing a fine job by making it known your purpose and plan to reach other people, you know. So just keep up the good work, man. And
thank you, sir.
Yeah, who tapped in. Thank God for them as well.
All right. Well, we got a few seconds here. We're going to leave on with giving up. It's hard to do when you care.